This podcast is sponsored by Athletic Greens. Now, I'm sure you've heard of Athletic Greens from a thousand different other podcasts, but the reason why I think this is the case is because it works. I've been using it for years, and the biggest benefits that I've realized is that it gives me more energy. I feel like I'm getting a full and healthy diet. My poops are better, and I'm sorry to say, but it's true. And so if you're somebody who really wants a healthy diet where they're confident they're getting all their micronutrients, go on and head over to drinkag1.com/Farzad. drinkag1.com/Farzad, where you'll get a free vitamin D plus K2 bottle and 5 free travel packs. Thank you so much to Athletic Greens. And now onto the podcast.
Build quality, absolute garbage. The Model 3 has a ton of road noise. The Model 3 feels like it's just going to fall apart when it's going down the road, but it's so much fun. Like it's so much fun to drive. Like I don't know. I love it.
Do you think Elon's recent rhetoric is hurting Tesla sales? So we've got Brandon here from Car Questions Answered, but also from a brand new YouTube channel that Brandon has launched, EVs on Ice, electric vehicles on internal combustion engines. And if you don't follow Brandon closely, number one, you should. And number two, Brandon is a used car dealer who just very recently has gotten into the EV world. He has purchased 2 Teslas, a Model S and a Model 3. And Brandon is returning to our channel. We had a discussion a few months ago, I believe, on a lot of questions around the electric vehicle market. You know, Brandon thought that it would be very wise for him to get a lot more exposed to it since he is a car dealer and there is a shift towards electrification in some respects. And what's going to be really cool about this conversation is we have someone that is on, let's call it, the opposite end of the universe as it pertains to automotive. We cover electric vehicles very heavily on this channel, but now we have someone who is essentially crossing the chasm to come over to, let's say, our side for a little bit. And so we're going to pick his brain on what he's learned, his likes, dislikes, where he sees the automotive segment going, and how he sort of envisions electric vehicles fitting into American culture. And so, Brandon, thank you so much for coming back. I'm just going to give you the mic, bro. Just start spitting some knowledge, bro. What you got? What you got for us?
Yeah, I appreciate y'all letting me come back. This is one of my favorite things to do, being able to come and talk about, especially stuff that I've learned. Because before I had the conversation with you guys, finding out what I really wanted to buy as far as electric vehicle, I didn't know a whole lot. I mean, I know the numbers. I know where the market's going, things like that. I'm seeing them at auction. But as far as the technology goes and actually having the experience of driving the vehicle, I've had almost no experience with that. So it's been enlightening to say the least, to be able to get into these 2 Teslas. It was not my original intention to buy both a 3 and an S, but it was very difficult for me to find an S that would come up for sale at these auctions that I go to on a regular basis. But I would see 3s all the time. They're everywhere. So I got antsy, impatient, and went ahead and bought a 3. And then obviously 3 weeks later, I saw like the perfect S that I wanted to buy. It came. So I have both of them now. I'm planning on keeping the S for a while. I do like that one more than the 3. We'll get in that in just in a little bit, but there's pros and cons with both of them. Pros and cons as far as what I'm looking at as far as just the cars in general are concerned. I initially went to try to go buy some from buy an S from a used car dealer, and it was a nightmare. I don't know why anyone would ever buy a car from a used car dealer ever. And I'm a used car dealer. Don't buy a car from me. This is an absolute nightmare. I went and tried to find one that had really, really, really high mileage that was really cheap. The first one that I tried to go buy was a 2000, I want to say it was a 17 Model S. It had 186,000 miles. And it was $13,000 online. But the second that I walked into the dealership, it turned into an $18,000 car, and it had no charge. It had 1% charge on it, so I couldn't drive it.
These freaking used car dealers, bro. These freaking used car dealers. My God.
So anyway, that's my experience. And then I, as far as trying to buy one, there was a few other dealers, and it was the same the same experience with all three dealers. Anyway, I found one at auction, and that's what I got. So do you want to know like what I bought, mileage, costs?
Yeah, give us a little bit of detail there, and then I will tee up sort of the first question after you go through that details. Like, what is the most surprising thing from ownership, and then we'll kick it off there.
Okay, first thing, so cars prices. The Model 3 is a 2019 Standard Range Plus. I don't know the difference between a Standard Range and a Standard Range Plus, but I got the Plus, whatever that is. And it's got 86,000 miles on it, and I paid a little over 17 grand for that one. And the Model S is a 2019. It has the Raven package in it. It's a long range. And I paid right over 22 grand for it, I believe, and it's got 100,000 miles on it. But since I was able to get a contact in Tesla to be able to check all these cars before I actually bought them, I checked this one, and the battery on the Model S had been replaced 1 month before I bought it. So I think that's
huge.
I think I stole that car. Yeah, yeah. So most surprising thing that I've found, I have not had to go to a charging station. I did not think that was going to be, I've driven them now, it's been a month and a half that I've been driving these two cars. The Model 3, I drove it for 3-4 weeks before I got the Model S. It only has an optimistic 200 miles of range, on the battery. And I never even really cut it close. I just plug it in at night and not even have to think about a charging station. So I think that's going to be something with me starting this new channel and being able to talk about some of the things that people don't think about. And plug my channel real quick. Go check it out. It's EVs on Ice. I'm going to be showing my experience of owning these Teslas. Finding out stuff that, Tesla fanboys take for granted that we non Tesla people don't know about. And the charging was a big surprise to me that it's a non-issue. If you have somewhere that's easy to plug it up at home, it's not an issue.
Would you say it's very difficult to convey this fact unless you own a Tesla?
I think it's going to, because you're not going to be able to cut through the noise. And I think anything that you're dealing with as far as education goes from Tesla, it doesn't matter how easy of a concept it is. Even if I can say, look, you don't think of it as a car, think of it as a cell phone. You plug in your cell phone every night. You don't have to, if you know that you're going to be without a place to charge, then you kind of, you plan, you take a little battery pack with you for your cell phone. You have to plan, as far as, keeping your cell phone charged. It's kind of the same thing. And if you know that you're not going to overuse your cell phone over the next day, then you don't really have to plan. You just know that you're plugging it up when you get home. And even though that's a simple concept for me to say, for someone to understand, if there's all this noise surrounding, well, your battery's going to die, you have nowhere to charge it. Well, I go to the gas station whenever I need it. So there's not a charging station even near me. What am I going to do? You're not going to be able to cut through the noise with education to people who are not going to be receptive to hear the education.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think anytime I've spoken to people that are hesitant about electric vehicles, the number one thing, the number one thing is cost. So people are usually like, they're expensive, right? The number two thing is charging, every time. And most, actually, a lot of times it's flipped. It's like charging and then cost. Precisely because of what you said, it's sort of this, I think transportation, moving around, feels so existential, especially to the US public, where it's any risk of not being able to go somewhere becomes like a huge anxiety thing. Like, this range anxiety thing is very, very true. But I think people massively overestimate how much they actually drive on a regular basis. And that's why most people do. I think most people in most situations drive a lot less than they think. And it's kind of like, but it's hard to convince somebody of that, because, you know, people like to think that they know themselves better than anybody else, right? Of course, and that makes sense. And anytime you try to say that, you come, even though you're not trying to be condescending, it's like, well, you can't tell me that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I know my driving habits. I know my car. I know what I'm comfortable with. And so let me ask you this. Do you think the amount of mileage in these cars that you own, do you think this is going, do you think this is enough mileage for most people? Or do you think that there still needs to be more work done to increase the mileage in these cars?
Honestly, I think it's fine. Even the 200 mile range one that I had, like I went to an auction one day. I was like, okay, I'm gonna push this all the way and see how optimistic this battery says it is. I dropped it down to about 10% of the battery when I pulled into the house, but I'd planned that out to be able to see it. But I think the way that you can look at it in these longer range models that are going to have 350 pushing 400 miles of range, the way that I think we have to convey this to people who don't understand or have the range anxiety, you have to say, okay, well, are you filling up your gas tank literally every day? And they're going to say no. They fill it up. Even if they drive a lot, it's going to be every 3-4 days. I say, well, imagine, okay, after you drive at the end of the day, you're literally just filling up your gas tank every single day when you pull into your garage or you're plugging it up at home. That is exactly what you're doing. So even if you feel like you're going to run out of this range, you're just not going. I know, I hear what you're saying, where it seems like you're insulting someone's intelligence, but you almost have to be able to convey this point where literally you're filling up your gas tank every single night by doing this.
Yeah. So, you know, it's funny watching you sort of like having to navigate these minefields now.
And what's funny is, so I've only put out one video on this channel. It was just a couple days ago. It's going to be very interesting because my comment section is already a war zone. So it's just interesting being able to watch these, because I'm bringing in and it's a completely different audience than what I'm used to. Most of my audience is going to be, they're going to be ICE drivers, and that's what they know. So I'm bringing in some of that audience, and I'm also bringing in some of your audience as well, just by having like Tesla in the title. And those two groups of people don't like to converse with each other very much. So it's very interesting. So even if you don't want to watch my videos on this new channel, just come over and just take a peek at the comments. It's very, very, very fun.
It's almost like a microcosm of like our political discourse, if you really think about it, you know, especially with the thing that happened yesterday with the whole Elon Trump. It's like, it's so fascinating to think about. Hans, go for it. I know you want to throw in a couple cents.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, you know, part of the space that we end up playing in is really just stuck in the new car sales space. And, you know, Brandon, you're, as a used car dealer and as someone who really tries to educate and inform people about the used car buying experience, like, your target audience, honestly, is someone like me. I have never bought a new car in my life. And when I go to purchase a car, like, value for money is top of mind. And that is a whole different mindset than the people who have been buying EVs now for years, because the only way that you have been able to buy an EV really meaningfully in the last decade has been to go to someone like Tesla and purchase it new. That's just the only place that it was available. And now we're finally getting to the point where, you know, there's some used inventory that's available, and they've been on the market long enough to where they've come down in price to, you know, reasonable people price points to purchase, you know, to begin with. And so, you know, you're talking about purchasing cars for in the neighborhood of $20,000 or less. And yeah, like, that's a whole different segment of the market than people who are buying, you know, new cars, period, much less new luxury cars that are selling for anywhere from $35,000 to $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, $100,000. And so it is, you know, like, very, very different demographics. And then to bring it back to, you know, Farzad's platform, we have talked about this shift over time, that the vast majority of all cars that are sold at that less than $30,000 price point. And so this, like, culture clash that we're talking about is the chasm that has to be crossed in order for EVs to really truly go mainstream and to actually sell to the vast majority of car buyers.
And this is absolutely what's got to happen. And I talk a little bit about well, the worse Tesla does right now in the short term, the better it's going to be for them in the long term as far as what sells. If you get this adoption that maybe doesn't happen as quickly as a lot of people were anticipating, not just throw out Tesla. Look at Ford, Chevy. If adoption doesn't happen as quickly as a lot of these manufacturers thought it would, then what's got to happen is there's going to be downward pressure on the new car sales, and that puts more downward pressure on the used car sales. And if the used EV space, used Teslas, if they get cheaper, more people can then get into. I wasn't even thinking about this 6 months ago, 12 months ago, but because there's been a ton of it's probably not so much on the new side from Tesla. I know there's been a lot of price cuts, things like that, missed deliveries. But from the used EV space, those prices have absolutely tanked over the last 6 months. And there's a lot of factors to go into that. But that's because the prices have dropped so much. That's why I was willing to do this little experiment. And there's going to be a lot of other people that, okay, maybe they didn't want to spend $30,000, $35,000 to just have a side Tesla to try it. So because they didn't want to just jump into the water with their only vehicle. But when they come down to 20,000, when you can find one for $15,000, $16,000, $17,000, then people can afford to have that as their experimental car. And that's going to be better for Tesla in the long run, because now you get these consumers that are willing to spend that kind of money on a car, then maybe they fall in love with it. And then their next new vehicle is going to be that Tesla.
Yeah. And that's exactly the position that we were in this year, is that we had two ICE cars, both of them used. You know, my very, very old Honda Accord that had well over 200,000 miles. I finally was like, okay, I can't stand this thing anymore. I need to go get something new. And as our second vehicle that I was able to purchase for, you know, basically $21,500, a used 2018 Model 3 that was a long range dual motor with 55,000 miles, including the FSD package fully purchased and premium connectivity. And like, I felt like that was a very reasonable price to pay for that vehicle. And since I don't have to rely on it to do everything that I need to do with the vehicle, you know, we still have our Toyota Sequoia when we need to take long road trips with lots of people. You know, we have all the room necessary to do that. And so when I need to do large vehicle things, I've got my large vehicle. But right now, even my wife primarily drives the Model 3, that it has consumed probably 80% or more of the total miles that we drive every month already. And, you know, the cost to operate that vehicle is very low. It's obviously, you know, much cheaper than gas on the Sequoia. And we just plug it in, like you said, every night. And the next morning, you can go anywhere that you need to go that day and never have to worry all day long until you get home. And it just makes so much sense. And I think that more and more people are going to be finding them. So like, it's going to be not the most common consumer who's making this transition yet, but it's not going to be that long of people having these experiences and talking about them before more and more people start to catch on to how much sense this makes right now.
Is it fair to say that price is easily the biggest variable for electric vehicles to become the dominant form of transportation in the United States? Would you say that's, or do you think it's something else?
I don't think it's just price. I think price is up there, but I think it doesn't matter if you get a Tesla's down to $10,000 for a new one. There's going to be people out there that are just like, I'm not driving a robot car. I'm not going to do it. And I think Elon, I don't know if it's strategic or not, but I do think that he is doing a good job to go out and support the Republican Party, support Trump, because that's where those people are going to that's the spectrum of those kind of people that are just going to be like, I'm never driving one. I don't care. I feel like it's been shoved down my throat, and just because they want me, whoever the collective they is, they want me to drive. They're making me drive this car. I'm not going to drive it. So I think there's a lot of that. But if you're talking about like just mainstream, it's so hard to not want to use I'm trying not to insult anyone's intelligence. I really don't want to do this, but to get the mainstream consumer out there to be able to get into the vehicle, it's going to just boil down to education, and it's going to boil down to price. And I think those two things are probably, they're probably about even in my opinion. And there's just going to be some people out there that are just not going to drive one no matter what.
Well, I think that part of it is also just thinking about time frames realistically. Like, obviously, when no one around you hardly drives one, of course, it's going to feel a lot more satisfying and safe to be like, heck no, I'm not driving one of those dang EV cars. But, you know, if you give it enough time and enough people, you know, like we're already at the early adopters in the used car market who are buying these vehicles. If you give it 10 years, pretty much, you'll definitely be deep into the normal middle of the bell curve. Average buyer will just as likely as not buy an EV versus an ICE car. And at that point, I think, you know, a lot of that hesitation and basically vitriol, like all the pent up feelings of, hey, you know, all these people, they want me to drive this dang car and I just don't want one. Like when half of your neighbors have them and they're like, dude, like it's fast, it's fun to drive, like zero stress, no maintenance, I charge every night and it's fine. Like whatever you're, you know, it's just harder to escape from that education piece. The more and more people around you have experienced firsthand how all the things that they've been told for years and years were basically baloney sauce and lies.
Yeah. And education is going to take care of itself the more people are driving EVs. So maybe Tesla doesn't have to spend any money on marketing. Maybe they don't have to spend any money on, don't call it marketing, but education. Maybe that's the play. And it's, I mean, it's working as of right now, but I'm curious to see what it looks like 5 years from now, when you have to get Tesla to cross that barrier of the people who are just like, no, I'm out. How do we get those people? And like an EV is not going to work for everybody. Someone who drives 200, 300 miles a day, probably not for them. And I get it. But 95% of drivers, it probably makes sense more than it doesn't. But I think we have to change topics a little bit, because I'm supposed to be this guy that's in the middle, and all we've done is talk roses and all these rainbow clouds about Tesla, we're not doing that on this message. So let's talk about the negative. Yeah. All right. Build quality, absolute garbage. And this is something that's known. But okay, the Model 3, way worse than the Model S. But both cars, I have one door on both cars that always looks like it's open. It's closed, but the door, the hinges aren't lining up just right. So if at certain angles, it looks like the door is not even shut, and it's the back door on the Model 3, but my Model S that I've been driving, it's the freaking driver's door. So there's this little whistle that happens in this car the whole time I'm driving that just drives me absolutely nuts. Model 3, all the plastic clips on the inside have already been busted off. So you have just, the trim is all flapping around all the time. You've got, the Model 3, the top of the steering wheel is already starting to come off, of the actual material of the wheel. All right. What else? The battery, the mileage versus what you actually get from what the car's telling you. Not even remotely close.
Very optimistic.
Yeah, it's so optimistic. Like even
especially in hot weather.
Yeah, and it has been hot here in North Carolina where I am. The Model S, the one that's got the brand new battery in it, it was even like 70, 80 miles off of the full range when I clicked. Now, I mean, when I drove it was hot, so I ran the air conditioning the whole time. But 70, 80 miles, that's a lot for it to be that optimistic. Tesla is definitely a glass half full kind of car. All right. What else? The Model 3, you want me to keep going?
Yeah. Yeah. Don't stop.
Just bad for your channel.
Well, of course not. It's all about, bro, we try to be as real about what's happening. And that's why you're here. So you can give your perspective from your viewpoint. So you know, what's interesting about what you just went through. So I think the reason why Tesla has been as popular as they have been, even with these issues, right, is that I think the people that buy them don't really put that much value on what you just described, and they put a lot more value on the technology and the driving experience. Whereas build quality is kind of like a much lower priority. And MKBHD, I don't know if you follow him on YouTube, but he sort of has talked about this where, you know, these are issues that have been known for years. They've been getting better for sure. If you get into a brand new Tesla, really a brand new EV from anybody, I would say that their build quality is on par with those vehicles now. A brand new Model 3 Highland, for example, is a very well-built car. And if you are close to one, I encourage you to kind of check it out and give me your thoughts. But I just don't feel like most people care. Like most people don't care about panel alignments. Most people don't care about trim fitting perfectly. That doesn't mean that it's not right for it to be that bad, for sure. But I think that's why they've been so successful. Now, will something like that hold their ability to sell into the market long term? Of course not, because then you're going to start selling into people that do care about that stuff. But I think the improvements they've had from a build quality perspective has helped them. What else? What other negatives do you have?
Cup holders suck. That's from my wife. Agreed. Wanted to let us know that. We talk about the driving experience. So thank you so much for talking to me before I bought this, because the S by far is as far as the experience driving, how it feels on the road, everything, the S is, it blows the three out of the water. It feels with the S like I'm driving a car that has a lot of tech, whereas the Model 3 feels like I'm driving a computer. The Model 3 has a ton of road noise. The S also has some road noise, but it's not even close to as bad as what the Model 3 is. The Model 3 feels like it's just going to fall apart when it's going down the road. I know it's not, but the way it sounds, the things that are shaking in the car, you feel every little bump in that car. I drive a lot of my car lot. We specialize in selling cars that are $5,000 and under. So I've driven some more expensive BMWs, and I really want to relate it to like a like for like vehicle. Like I look at the Model S, and the same price point is going to get you a really nice BMW sports car. So I wanted to compare it to something like that, but you can't. It's not even close as far as the build quality. So just circling back, I look at the Model 3, and it feels like the way that it handles, the noise that's in the car, it feels like it's a really, really fast 2005 Kia Spectra. That's what I've really connected it to. It feels like a cheap car
with an amazing computer in it,
but it's so much fun. It's so much fun to drive. Like I don't know. I love it. Like I can look just like you're saying, like I'm around cars all the time. I can look past all this little stuff the second that I hit that gas pedal, and it's so much fun. And the tech is good. The tech in the Model 3, I feel like is it feels better than in the S. The screen's more responsive. I hate that they're both a 2019, and the Model 3, I can use my phone as the key. In the Model S, you cannot do that. They did not actually update that, I think, until 2021. I looked it up. And I don't understand why the same type of system would not be in the same year car. Maybe, Farzad, maybe you can answer that for me. But you cannot use your phone as a key in a 2019 S.
Okay. Which key do you have? Do you have the little car key for the Model S?
Yep.
Okay, maybe that's what it is then. Because I remember having a 2016, and I had to use the little key thing. I'll double check for that. I'll double check that for you after the pod is over. But wow, okay, if that's the case, that's I've researched it,
and you can't use your phone as a key for S. Yep.
You wish you could. You wish you could have used your phone for the key, right? So you can just approach it like the Model 3. Yeah, yeah, that's one of like those like silent features that are pretty sick.
Yeah, and I love that about the Model 3, and as terrible as the quality on the Model 3 is compared to the Model S, the Model 3 was actually more fun to drive. It's not faster than my Model S, but it feels faster. And I don't know if it's because it's smaller. I don't know, but it feels like the Model S, I can get it up to speed and then go beyond that and not even know I'm doing it because it's not jerking you back like the Model 3 is. It's just effortless speed that you're getting from the Model S, and you can be over the speed limit just like that, not even realize it. But the Model 3, it feels like it's actually working to get there, but you're feeling it in your body with the Model 3. So it's actually a little bit more fun. It feels like you're driving a little go-kart around. And I think Hans said he bought a Model 3. So the actual experience seems it's more fun with the Model 3, but the Model S, you can tell, is a much, much better made car.
I actually even had the experience of, I drove a Plaid S for the first time this last week. And, you know, driving that back to back with the 3, and a dual motor 3. So it's not a dual motor performance, but it is a dual motor. So it's got quite a bit of pep to it. The, you know, coming back to the 3 from the Plaid, obviously the accelerator pedal feels a lot more mushy in the 3 than it did in the S. But pretty much everything else about the driving dynamics, I actually enjoy more about the Model 3. Like, it's just more rowdy. It's easier to throw around. It's very fun and responsive, and the steering feels so direct. Like, when you're driving the S, it feels like a giant heavy sled of a car, because that is what it is. And I mean, it will accelerate for days, but in that way, it almost reminds me more of like an homage to a classic muscle car, where, you know, it's big and heavy and it'll go fast in a straight line. But as far as being fun to drive anything other than a straight line, it's not really the ideal form factor for that. And the 3 really, really is just fun, like fun incarnate.
The two biggest variables are the much quicker steering in the Model 3. So the ratio is a lot tighter. It's a lot more direct. It has a lot less play when it's neutral and center. So it sort of, you can activate the steering a lot faster. And then it's about 1,000 pounds lighter than the Model S. So like those two things combined, and it has worse build quality, which gives you more of the road.
All of the road.
Yeah, you're getting the entire road, which is funny, because the Model 3 performance, I don't know if you're tracking the space, but it's becoming a very, like, a lot of enthusiasts are picking up the Model 3 performance as like their daily because of those things. It's like, yes, it's not the best build car for sure. There's a lot of, especially for older models, like the years y'all have, the 2018s and the 2019s, that Model 3s didn't really start getting built properly until like 2022, 2023, let's say. Not until the very last ones, where it's like, hey, this is like a legitimate, well-built car inside and out from a trim perspective. But it's sort of that connection to the road that, you know, it's like, I think this is like an important point to drive home, which I think kind of talks about the dynamic that we're in now. This is not a Tesla exclusive thing. This is just what EVs are. This is like what we describe of like the driving dynamic. This is one of the huge selling points of electric vehicles that people like myself and Hans, for the last 10 years plus, you know, we've been saying like, hey, this is where we think the market is going, because the experience of the driving is what, at least I think, so much more superior than the experience of a gas car, because of that instant acceleration. And then when you remove all those other pieces out of the car, like your engine, so on and so forth, and over time, as battery technology gets better and better, you start getting the shell that you can customize with technology, and especially with autonomy, which is something that I want to talk to you about as well, that you can transform this thing from a lumbering dinosaur to the next generation of transport. And it's so hard to convey that with videos, with words, with audio, unless you get behind the steering wheel of a car, of an electric vehicle, and specifically a Tesla in this case, to be like, okay, now I can kind of see that. And, you know, so let me ask you this question. So would you say that it's become a little bit, easier to understand. Easier to understand where people like me and Hans are coming from. And do you agree that there's something there? Like, sort of how we've been talking about the space, or do you still feel like, would you say that is a fair statement, what I just described?
I have only owned, I can't believe I'm going to say this. I've only had these cars now that I've been driving for 2 months, and I've told my wife for a daily driver, I don't know why I would ever drive anything else. And it's, I love the experience. I love the car. It's a fantastic car. I love that I've not been to a gas station in 2 months. I love that I'm not going to change the oil in this thing. Now I haven't had anything break on it yet. So I haven't had that experience. Something's going to break. I don't like the quality of the car, but as the quality is going to get better. There's no way it goes down from here. So I can absolutely get on board. I think it's going to be a problem for a lot of people, and it's going to be that education thing. But if you were to able to just get every person in a Tesla and just let them drive down the road, then you would change a lot of minds very, very, very quickly. The problem is you got to get their butts in the seat. And that's going to be difficult to do. So just me knowing what I know now and knowing that I'm going to be a Tesla driver for my daily, probably for the foreseeable future, then yes, I'm more open to where the market's going as far as EVs go, but I think it's still going to take a lot longer than probably what you think it's going to take.
So we changed your mind on one thing. I'm going to wait a little bit longer to change your mind on the other thing. How about that?
you didn't change my mind. The car changed my mind.
The car changed my mind. Okay. We'll give the credit to the car. No problem.
Yeah. Tesla engineering changed your mind.
Let me ask you about autonomy. So so when we had you last time, you were like, hell no, never going to do it. I don't care how good it is. I'm not going to trust it. Having owned these cars for 2 months now, has that changed at all?
Yes, it's even more of a hell no at this point. So I haven't used FSD yet. What I've used autopilot, and the car constantly wants to jump across dotted lines. It constantly slams on brakes. It constantly, it's like it doesn't recognize other cars around it almost sometimes. It doesn't drive like a normal human would drive. It's more of an aggressive and then non-aggressive and then aggressive and non-aggressive, and it doesn't stay in the lane. So me seeing that with just autopilot, that scares me to death for FSD. So I don't know if they just haven't put a lot of time into autopilot. I don't know if it's the same kind of system as FSD. If it's completely different, then I still want to get FSD just to try it, but I'm going to have my hands on the steering wheel. I'm going to have my foot right on the brake. But I have no interest in letting FSD drive me for a very long time at all when there are other cars around, because autopilot has, in my experience, has been just absolutely terrible. It's scary how bad it is.
Did you use it in the city or on the highway?
Both.
Do you notice any performance difference between the city or the highway, or is it terrible for you?
Highway both? is definitely better, but it's a straight line and it's easy. It's just like cruise control and you're put in it. But if there's ever any kind of turns or anything, and if there's cars around, then it's still bad. I mean, but around the city, it's almost unusable.
Yeah, autopilot is designed for highway, not for city. But Tesla doesn't prevent you from using autopilot in the city, which they probably think about doing. But especially now with FSD, so they are on two completely different stacks, two completely different systems. Autopilot uses sort of more of a single camera, look forward looking, with some sensors around the car. FSD uses 8 cameras around the car, and they're now shifting over to this end-to-end neural net approach, which is a fancy way of saying it's an AI brain that's driving the car, which over time will mimic human behavior, the best of human behavior. And the latest version that they have out right now is FSD 12.5.1.3 or some crazy number like that, which the 12.5 tree has been getting some great reviews, but it's not yet being pushed to hardware 3 cars, which is what you have. You have a hardware 3, model 3. They're being pushed to hardware 4 cars. So basically have the newer computer. So I think once that 12.5 version is out to the hardware 3 cars, like cars like yours, I think it would be a good time for you to try it out, just to see what you think. just so you can kind of see the difference of how they've improved that. And yeah, so I'm curious to see whenever you get that beam to your car, what your thoughts are, because it is a gigantic difference between the autopilot system and the FSD system. And I'd be curious to see if over time you would be more willing to try it out more and more if you think it's good enough.
Yeah, and my Model S has the Raven package in it, so I will be able to just pay the $99 a month and get the FSD from my understanding. So I will absolutely try that, but I will be terrified while I'm trying it, and I will not try it when there's other cars around, because I don't know how they're not more like accidents like all over the news surrounding autopilot, because it's I can't put in words how bad it is.
It's because it's two drivers. It's because you have the computer and the driver paying attention. So you really have two sets of eyes on the road, not just one.
Here's my question about FSD. Is it going to correctly profile other drivers like I can do? So if you get this guy pulling up in a lifted Chevy truck coming up to the stop sign that you're about to go through, smoke bellowing out the side of the window with his choice of flag, whatever he's believing in that day, out the back of the truck, he don't give a damn about that stop sign. I need to stop and let him have the right of way, even though it's my right of way, because Tesla needs to be able to program that in to be able to profile that driver, because that's a big safety concern for me.
So, you know, it's funny, because that's I could totally see where you're going with that. And I think us humans would definitely approach that very differently, especially in a Tesla when you're in a super lifted, F-150 with the American flag and another flag next to it, let's say. here's the crazy part. Right. So the way the self-driving system learns is by using video that they've captured from the road. And so the idea behind it is, okay, so at four-way stops, I'm going to feed the system, this AI brain, millions of situations where the Tesla's approaching the four-way stop. And I'm going to let the AI decide the best way to handle those four-way stops. And it absolutely 1000% takes into account its surroundings. It's just a matter of the AI system deciding if the variable that it's seeing, which in this case would be if it thinks identifying a lifted truck with two flags and smoke billowing out from the front door is an important variable to capture, the AI system would capture that. And so like it's kind of wild to think about, but there is a world where the car would very much behave differently around different cars. And like, I'll give you a perfect example of this with the latest system. When you're on the highway and you're going past an 18-wheeler, like you're passing on the left lane, for example, the car will bias towards the outer lane, so that it doesn't get as close to the 18-wheeler, to give itself more room between the 18-wheeler. So that's a very small example of that. But the AI system, in theory, is flexible enough to take into account any variable that it sees as a decision to drive. Because again, the idea is to mimic the human brain. And that's like, it's so hard to convey this to the, like, you know, you were talking about, it's hard to convey the how nice it is to not have to go to a gas station and not have to worry about charging until you're behind the steering wheel of the car. It's hard to convey just how fundamentally crazy this self-driving approach Tesla is taking with their AI approach versus using what's called heuristics, which is what Waymo and the other guys are doing, which is sitting down and writing a bunch of code and, you know, how to behave around stoplights, how to behave around stop signs, how to behave around school buses, how to behave around cop cars, so on and so forth. They're just giving this to an AI brain, and the AI brain just figures it out.
Very interesting. So what I'm hearing from you is, when I'm driving on the highway and there's a big Cadillac that's only going 50 miles an hour in a 70 mile per hour speed limit, that Tesla is already going to know that old man with the big prescription sunglasses, we need to go around him. That's what I'm hearing, right?
There is a world where that would 1000% be the case. Yes.
So then we're going to have a bunch of discrimination lawsuits on our hand for the AI is correctly profiling these people, right?
Yeah. In this day and age, everybody will go to jail. Everybody will go to jail because, you know, everybody's just racist and terrible sexist people, so on and so forth. Okay. What does your wife think of the car? both cars.
She thinks they're both ridiculous and there's no space in it. And there's a ongoing joke in our house because when you pushed me into the Model S, you said that the I believe you used the word cavernous for the trunk of the Model S.
Yes.
We could barely get a stroller in the trunk. So this was coming from, I think at the time, brand new father, still brand new father, right?
How big are your strollers, bro?
It's a normal stroller. I got one kid. It's a one kid stroller and it would barely go in there. So no, the trunk is not cavernous. In the Model S trunk? In the Model S, yeah.
You sure you have a Model S, bro? With the hatchback?
Yeah, I got a Model S. I know what it is.
What car do you usually put that stroller in?
I mean, we've had big SUVs. That's we've had that. She's got Honda Odyssey, so she's got a van. I've had trucks.
Well, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, compare a sedan to a truck and a minivan and a huge SUV. Of course, no.
The joke is because you use the word cavernous, and the trunk is not cavernous
for its class. I should have said for its class.
Okay.
Is that fair?
That sounds better. It's the same size as any hatchback car. It's not any bigger or any smaller. It's the same size as a hatchback. Anyway, that's the running joke. She is a very functional person. It's cavernous. Yeah. She is a very functional person. So she does not care about the acceleration. She doesn't care that it looks like a cool car. She doesn't even really care that much about the tech. She's very, very functional. I got very lucky to be able to find her and marry this woman. But the downside of that is things that in cars that I'm going to think are cool, she don't give two whatever's about. Right. So, she thinks the experiment is awesome. She thinks it's very needed for someone who is going to try to align right in the middle of all these both sides of the anti-EV, EV discussion. I'm going to be able to hopefully bridge that gap. She loves that aspect of it. And she likes the idea of the car. But as far as driving the car, she doesn't care.
So let me ask you a more of an industry question. So how do you view Tesla's 2025 coming up here, especially in relation to other EV manufacturers? Like why the Tesla? Why not a Mach-E? Why not an EV6? Why not an F-150 Lightning? Why the Model S and the Model 3? And then we'll turn that into a discussion.
So there wasn't even a thought for the other automakers to even get into an EV. And it's just because of the longevity of what Tesla's already been able to, I won't say perfect, but they've spent way more time than Ford has actually making these vehicles. And that's really the biggest thing. When I think EV, and I've not been following the space for a very long time, but when I think EV, I think Tesla. I don't think anything else. So there was really no thought even to look. The only other like EVs I've really looked into have been Rivian, but that's what they do. So Tesla, they make an EV. Rivian, they make an EV. They don't make gas cars. So I want to, if I'm going to buy an EV, I want to buy an EV from a company that does EVs. Ford does not do EVs. Tesla does EVs. Rivian, they do EVs. And that's where I'm going to gravitate to. And as far as looking at like 2025 for Tesla, are you talking about stock? You're talking about the technology? You're talking about adoption?
Sales, what, performance in the US? Yeah, adoption.
In my estimation, I think sales are going to come close to plateauing would be my estimate. Plateau to a little bit up. And that's because I feel like you're going to have a lot of these other manufacturers that are going to have price pressure down. And I think that you've already had the people who are they're just going to buy EVs. They've already done it. And I think because now we're seeing that the used side of these EVs is a viable solution. And every dealership that I've been to that have had Teslas for sale on the used side, they got people all over them. Like they're selling them. So people are wanting to get into EVs, but now there are other options. And I think that's going to hurt Tesla. I don't think the sales are going down. I think they're still going to sell a crap ton of cars. I just don't think there's going to be this logarithmic curve in growth. And I think the stock market agrees with me because I think a lot of that growth is where a lot of your stock price has shot up over the last 5 years. And now there's been a growth scare, whether it's Tesla's fault, whether it's our economy's fault. You can build that into to the equation too, that I think we're not going to continue this logarithmic curve of growth and sales for Tesla because of the economy, adoption, other automakers coming into the fold, and also the used side as well. So those four things I think are going to hurt the logarithmic growth.
So what do you think about Tesla's plans of releasing a cheaper model in the next 6 to 12 months that's rumored to start somewhere between 25,000 to 30,000 new? Do you think that's going to do anything?
I mean, do you ever believe timelines that Elon says anymore? I don't understand how we can keep hearing timelines from him, and there's never been, I think, one ever that he's been accurate on.
I can give you three timelines. So 500,000 cars by 2020. The Model Y was released early. The Gigafactory, battery Gigafactory in Nevada, was built on time.
I guess I'm leaning more to the actual cars. So that's...
Yeah, Model that's Y. Model Y released early.
We'll say that, yep. But,
it's definitely coming. I mean, it's so here's the deal. It might be late, but it's 1,000% sure coming. I mean, so as somebody that's followed the company very closely, 1,000% Elon is the most optimistic timeline person in the history of mankind. Yeah. Nothing more than full self-driving. He's been late for 8 years, okay? 1,000%. But when as it pertains to the long-term strategy of the company, what he's hit every single one. He's just late on every one. So let's say by the end of 2026, let's use the Elon timeline.
Just throw out a date. Say when that car releases, what do I expect?
Perfect. There you go.
Because I think the timeline, I mean the Cybertruck took 18 years to come out, and he keeps promising. He's the greatest hype man for any company ever. He's the best hype man ever, because if your stock price goes down a little bit, oh well, Cybertruck's coming out tomorrow, so you might as well buy it now. And then tomorrow comes and Cybertruck's still not here, and it's also not $65,000. Not yet. So that's another thing. I mean, we've been lied to from the company about price points too. So do you feel like in the next 6 to 12 months they're going to put out this car and it's going to be the price that they say?
The price that they hit came true years after. So the Model 3 does start at 35. It was originally launched at 35 in 2017, and it's 35 with inflation. So this is what I'm saying. Like, so every single one of these things that the company has outlined, they've been lies until they haven't been lies. And I think that's one of the things, that's where Elon doesn't help himself. It's kind of like this, like you need you need 500 miles of range to own an EV. This is where Elon needs to like he needs to take every timeline he in his head. He needs to divide it by 10 and then divide it by 10 again. And then he'll be able to set a proper expectation for the markets. So yeah, 1,000% confident that at some point in the future, they will have a compact car that starts between 25 and 30,000. So when that time comes, what do you expect, Brandon?
If they can get out an EV that is $25,000, it'll sell like crazy. And then they won't be able to keep up with demand, and they'll have to make sure that their margins don't get absolutely crushed, because if they're not going to make money, I mean, I know Elon's big goal is not necessarily money driven, it's changing the world. But at the end of the day, I mean, shareholders, they need to see some money, right? So it's going to depend on margins too, and how many they're going to make, because you have this same kind of thing that's happened with Ford. I know Ford and Tesla are nowhere close to the same, but you have Ford Mavericks, the small truck that everyone wants to buy. If you put it on the Ford dealership lot, they buy it. But the problem is Ford doesn't make a ton of money on these Mavericks, and they make a lot of money on their F-150s. So yeah, these cars can sell like crazy, and it's going to really depend on if they want to mass produce stuff like that. And if they want to make as many of those as they're making the Model 3s or the Model Ys, that they're going to probably make a lot more money on. And then you get the situation where people are just buying them and then selling them for crazy amounts over what they're actually selling for. But okay, I'm getting off the tangent. If they produce a $25,000 EV, it will sell like crazy.
Let me ask you a potentially controversial question. You ready for it?
My favorite.
Okay. Do you think Elon's recent rhetoric is hurting Tesla sales?
Short term, yes. Long term, it's going to be good for Tesla, I think.
Help me understand that.
I think he can gain a wider we're in YouTube. We talk about audience all the time. He can gain a wider audience for who is okay to try the technology if he is seemingly coming on to their side in looking policy, whatever, politics, whatever you want to call it. But if he is now seeming more like he's on what they're calling the right team, then they're going to be more apt to be able to try the technology and not feel like this is a Democratic technology and I don't need to touch it. This is now can be considered a Republican technology, and now it is clean for me to try. I think long term it's a good thing for Tesla.
So so the flip side of the question, and I ask you this because ultimately you sell products to the public. How often do people, would you say, use political reasons to purchase a product like a car? Like, do you think there's going to be a hangover on the Tesla brand by Elon potentially alienating Democrats by endorsing a Republican candidate so publicly?
I think that there was more hit on the Republican side because of, from what seemingly looked like, Democrats shoving EVs down their throat. That's how they felt. At least that's my read on it. And then on the flip side, I don't think there's going to be as much loss on the Democratic side of the EV sales, because you're also looking at saving the planet, climate change, stuff like that. These are things that the liberal side can definitely get on board. And there wasn't that much of that on the more conservative side. Not that conservatives don't want to save the planet and keep it clean and everything like that, but there's not that much. It's not even close to as much of a drive for that as there is on the Democratic side or the liberal side. So I feel like it's going to be not the same amount of loss. If Elon just came out and was the Republican candidate for president tomorrow, I still think you would have liberals that would still buy the technology because they want to still save the planet.
One of the things that I find very fascinating about this timeline, this story, is that, you know, Hans and I have we have channels, we run this podcast, and traditionally speaking, you know, when I started my channel, it was pretty easy for me to tell, and especially when I spoke with people in person too, all wonderful people, but you could tell that the Tesla name, the EV name, was definitely a magnet for a lot of liberal-minded people, for sure. 1,000%, right? And I think the one thing that has gotten lost in this sort of transition, you know, like it or not, depending what your politics are, of Elon going from what seemingly, like, his outward persona was very much Republican, people would say he was a total liberal because he's just hogging up EV tax credits for his climate change dream, right? That's a lot of the rhetoric that I heard before. Now that it's been a move more towards the right with freedom of speech and some of the other things that he's been talking about, this base has gotten disrupted. These people that have been following, the ones that identify themselves as very closely aligned with Tesla's mission, which makes them feel like they're doing the right thing, Elon has almost punched them in the face. They feel like they've been punched in the face because they're like, how dare you side with the enemy, right? But at the same time, and again, these are wonderful people. Like, they really are wonderful people. I just think, you know, they have a different moral compass. I still feel like that is a minority of the population. I think my opinion is that no more than 20% of the buying public in the United States specifically, and 20% is probably a high, big number, but let's say 20%, they use morals to make purchasing decisions. I think the 80% of the public are like Hans, are like you, are like most people that I talk to, which are like, give me the best bang for my buck and just tell me that it's not going to break and just make it easy for me to live my life and just let me be happy, right? And I think that's where Tesla's product fits so nicely, because I think they hit those check boxes really well. And I agree with you that I think over time, as there are more butts in seats and more people get exposed to this car and technology, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And any of this near-term noise with this politics stuff becomes a thought of the past, because as long as they're able to hit those targets we talked about, the $25,000 compact car, let's say they solve self-driving to the point where even somebody like you starts using it, right? The story writes itself. right? But they have to execute on those goals.
So here's the problem with that too, is that I think it is a headwind no matter which side Elon is on, no matter which side thinks, okay, EVs are for us or our group, our limited amount of people, whatever. Most products don't have this issue. You talk about people don't buy with politics. Like, I mean, there's like TVs. I mean, you look at other technology, grocery, any kind of product. There's not many out there that have any kind of political draw. There's going to be some out there, but most 98% of products out there, there's no even political discussion. And it's a problem for Tesla that there even is a political discussion. I think it's absolutely, I think it's so stupid. It's a car, it's a machine, right? And I do think it's going to be a headwind for Tesla no matter what the outcome is, no matter where Elon lands, because he's going to end up alienating some of the consumers that he wants to sell to no matter what. So it's going to be a problem Tesla's going to have to sort through, because Elon, he doesn't care who you vote for. He doesn't care what you look like, where you live, whatever. He wants to sell you a car. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, I think it's the commentary around it being a short-term problem. I think it's 100% fair. I mean, I've seen it. I mean, I see it in my comments. I can't believe Elon supported Trump. I can't believe Elon said this. I can't believe Elon said that. You know, we're looking to sell the cars. I have a very good friend of mine, Galley, who has a fantastic channel on Tesla. You know, he has personally experienced members of his family, you know, like, changing their minds on this individual and changing their minds on the product. But I still feel like all in, it's likely to be a small impact, but it's still a fascinating thing to track, because like you said, when's the last time this happened? Like, the only other examples I can think of is like J.K. Rowling and the Harry Potter franchise. She's very outspoken about trans stuff, right? On X, and her entire Harry Potter thing is like tied to her very specifically. You had the whole Target thing, you had the whole Bud Light thing, you had the whole Disney thing, right? So it's like, you know, we live in times where companies somehow become political, even though they're not trying to become political. And it's all driven by our psychotic social media and mainstream media landscape, but that's a topic for a different day. Hans, I've been talking for so long. Do you want to ask Brandon anything?
So is the political question marks around this going to delay your plans to start an all used Tesla specialized car dealership?
No. When they get below $5,000, that's when I'll start one, I guess. But no, because I feel like, I know you guys think it's going to be really quick, but I think it's going to be a very long time before you get even like 50% of the population that's driving an electric vehicle. I can't remember. There was an interview that me and Farzad did together. I don't know how long it was, but he put a time frame on it, and I need to go back and look at that video, because I said there's no way.
I remember what the number is. 50% of new car sales by 2030 will be electric in the United States.
I think there's no way, because I don't think by that time frame you're going to have a truck that people want to put to work. Like contractors are going to be able to. I mean, you can imagine. Home building, the economy surrounding housing and stuff like that makes up like 18% of our overall economy. That's a lot of people building houses. That's a lot of guys out there getting to work and driving a whole lot. And that's going to be a very tough demographic to be able to change. And what's the number one selling vehicle in the U.S. right now? It's F-150. It's going to be hard for Tesla to overcome that. Because they're not doing it with Cybertruck. Have you seen it? It's hideous. And
it's
those
the
guys
greatest
are
fucking car on the road, bro.
No, it's the ugliest thing I've ever seen. I haven't been in one. I've seen tons of them now, so they're everywhere. But the thing about it is, they're everywhere already. They're not special.
Why are you contradicting yourself, Brandon?
They're everywhere because they were special. Now they're not special, and on top of that, they're ugly.
Listen, I can't wait for you to come back and change your mind on that too.
I will not change my mind on that. Now, I think, I mean, like F-150 Lightning, they put out a truck that looks like a truck, and no one wants it. You're going to have to get truck buyers into electric trucks. That's how you get to that 50% number.
But why don't people want the F-150 Lightning? Because of exactly what you said. Because when most people think of electric, they think of Tesla. right? So I don't know if you saw in June, I think June or July. So the Cybertruck is already the best-selling electric vehicle pickup in the United States already. It's been out for 7-8 months, and it's already selling more than the F-150 Lightning, Chevy Silverado, and the Rivian R1T. Already. Looking as ugly as you say looks, you know, and being as expensive as it is right now. That means something.
Well, the thing, Ford sold 3 Lightnings last year, though. I mean, so it's not hard to do.
You can't keep moving the bar, bro.
Yeah. I'm just make sure we're putting these goalposts where they need to be for this truck.
50% new car sales EVs by 2030, and if I'm wrong, I'll buy you your favorite beer.
Just a beer?
24 pack of your favorite beer. How about that?
Okay, yeah, we'll do that. I think it's just going to be very hard because of the truck buyers and this. I really feel like for the next 10-20 years, there's just going to be this 20-25% of the population that'd be like, no, I don't feel comfortable. I'm not going to buy an EV.
So do you know how I think Tesla's going to get around that to get that number? So if you think about a $25,000 brand new EV from Tesla, the cost per mile for that, so like the ownership costs of that vehicle are going to be very, very low, right? Very low compared to a Camry, compared to Corolla. You're going to have even much, much lower cost per mile. And so I think that's going to open up a brand new market that doesn't exist right now, which is of people that could own a car, but choose not to own a car, or could buy a new car, but choose not to buy a new car because they know the used car is going to be cheaper. Because they know they can't afford the new car. I think Tesla's going to just knock that door completely wide open, and they're going to steal that entire market. And I think what we think of right now as a, say, 13 to 14 million units per year car market in the United States, where 25% of that is pickup trucks, I think by 2030, it's going to be like an 18 million unit per year a car market where a Tesla could be selling upwards of 30% of that into the market through their whatever that number is. I think that's how they capture that market share over time.
Depending on the next administration. So we know with a more liberal administration, there's going to be more of a push for EVs. We know a more conservative administration, probably not so much, correct?
I don't know.
I actually don't think so. If the next administration is Harris-Waltz, I think that, well, they'll probably try and support all the other EV automakers except Tesla, and they will, like, Elon has done pissed off the current administration so much that they are going to come after him hard in the next administration if they're elected again.
But even if they just lean into the other auto manufacturers for their EVs, that's still a tailwind for the EVs as a whole.
Except none of those other people can make decent EVs, which is the hard thing.
At a profit. But that's really the limiting. Like the reason why these guys are not selling EVs is because they can't make them at a profit. Like people don't want them. And the ones they do make, they can't make at a profit. I think the other thing that gets lost in this discussion of like Democrats push EVs. They push EVs. But in 2023, when the EV tax credit was put in place, Tesla was left off of the list. And they had every right to get the EV tax credit than any other automaker. And it required this giant grassroots effort by the public to convince the government to switch their policy so they can actually include Tesla in their EV tax credit. And I think that's one thing. And that was a Biden administration. And they were trying to leave Tesla off the table completely from getting that tax credit. And literally people had to fight to get that tax credit included. I think here's another weirder thing to think about. Between in the Trump administration from 2016 to 2020, Tesla went from selling roughly 50,000 cars per year to 500,000 cars per year. From 2020 to 2024, Tesla went from about 500,000 to 1.8 million, but they've sort of hit their peak, right? But it's sort of, it's correlated to them bringing up new car production, like introducing a new total addressable market. Back in 2016 to 2020 was the Model 3 and the Model Y. Now from 2025 to 2028 is going to be that compact car. And I think regardless of what the administration does, to Hans's point, I think the Tesla's ultimate strategy is going to be just drop the price of the damn car so that more people can buy it. And I think this discussion sort of reinforces that for me. Because again, like you use yourself as an example. You would have never in a million years considered buying a Tesla, but until the prices came down to the point where like, huh, this is interesting, right? I think a lot of people fall in that bucket. A lot of people.
Brandon, let's stick for just a second on your example of the truck market before we move there. Because I think that you're right as far as contractors and people who are using these vehicles for work. Like at the end of the day, these are businesses, and these businesses are going to make rational business decisions. And so if you're going to have to spend more money on a Ford F-150 Lightning than you would spend on just the regular Ford F-150, it has got to provide value back to the business that makes up for the extra additional cost up front. And right now, Ford's, they just don't really do that. And that's why the F-150 Lightning is hard to sell next to an F-150. Like if the F-150 Lightning provided more value per dollar than the F-150, it would be a no-brainer business proposition. They would sell like hotcakes. The commercial fleet would transition over to them very quickly. And right now, that's not where the Cybertruck is at either, because it is, you know, selling Foundation Series only and $100,000+. And it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But if they can ramp up volume production to 250,000 a year plus, then that will, once they have those economies of scale, I think that they will reach those $60,000 to $70,000 entry price point vehicles. And at that point, I think it really become like, if it costs you the same to buy a gas F-150 as it costs you to buy an equivalent Cybertruck, oh, and the Cybertruck's going to cost you half total cost of ownership over the life of the vehicle and all of the work that you're going to do with it going onto and off of job sites, as long as you don't have to tow heavy trailers for hundreds of miles every day, that it's just not going to do that one use case very well for a little while still. But if you're, but other than that truck, which you're probably not getting an F-150 for anyways, you're probably getting an F-250 or an F-350, then it's going to make sense for a lot of contractors and service techs and all sorts of, you know, different tradesmen to transition, just because their businesses will be more profitable operating on the truck that you plug in every night. It costs you a third to a half to fill that up of what it would an ICE vehicle. And gas is a huge operating expense for your business.
So you look at fleets of trucks, like fleet sales are one of the biggest driving factors of a lot of these auto manufacturers, especially right now. So you think of like a work crew. I know you're singling out like one contractor. Yeah, he can take that truck home and just plug it in at his house at night. But a lot of companies, when you're talking about business and they're trying to save money or whatever, they're going to have 6-7 trucks that they run on a daily basis. Yes, they are going to use trailers. They're going to be pumping AC all day. So are we just going to have charging stations at each one of these guys' lots to be able to, okay, when they do have a haul that happens all day long, what are the situations? Because a lot of these people, these guys who are going to be buying trucks to go to work, they need that truck to work in every situation, not just for that situation where they're going to check on some job sites. They need it to be able to haul. Even if they're not hauling every day, they need it to be able to haul. They need it to be able to maybe run for 2 days, and they don't have the time to let it sit and charge for even charging at 30 miles an hour, which is what I think is probably going to be standard for most people, unless you have a supercharger hooked up at your house. I think those work cases, even if there's just one situation once a month that they're going to run into, I think they're still going to lean to the gas vehicle just because they can go and fill it up when they want to. They don't have to worry about having any kind of infrastructure set up at their lots, at wherever they're doing work. But I can't agree with you for that one contractor that just goes and maybe prices jobs, or just every once in a while, maybe he'll have a short trip where he's hauling a trailer. That's not the standard for people who are going to be in the construction industry, though.
So let me answer this question. How much of that preconceived notion that a lot of people had, that they thought they needed a lot more range to do their daily driving, also applies to that crowd?
If you're just talking about daily driving, it depends on the like the
no,
the
I'm not saying daily driving. I'm saying like you were talked about at the beginning of the podcast, there is a subset of the population, like a pretty significant one, that it is tough for them. Like we're talked about, we're trying not to insult the audience. We're just trying to like convey that a lot of people drive a lot less than they think, and they have a lot less need for a lot of range than they think. How much of that also applies to the work crew? Because I feel like it's probably like, if you just think about statistics, like it's probably a lot of people as well. No.
And can the supercharger network solve that? That like those one extras.
I think it's probably way less than the daily driver just because all of this is getting expensed. I run a business. I know, I mean, we can pull up on our spreadsheet exactly how much gas we're spending. We know how far our guys are going to go do transport. Like we track all this stuff. We know how long the trips are. So, I mean, we have an auction that we go to. We have a transporter that gets our cars from that auction. We have a price built into what we pay that transporter because of how many miles it takes. So all of this, I think, is going to be tracked way more than what just the average daily driver is going to actually know of what they drive on a daily basis.
I think that's a very fair point. I think that's a great point. The business person, like, you know, I guess Hans's point initially, they are money people first. Like it's a lot less about, ooh, I feel good in this versus what is my bottom line? And at least good business people are, right? I know a little too many business people that don't do that. But so from that perspective, they're going to be a lot more diligent about ensuring that works. So they would know what their use cases are. So, okay, I think that's fair. I think that's super fair, Brandon.
If you get it fixed where superchargers put into these places where these guys are parking these trucks for storage or whatever, if that gets fixed where you can have them and you can have them at a price point that makes sense, then yeah, we can have another discussion around that. And that's going to come. It's just not going to be quick, I don't think. And then really the use case where they're going to need this truck and they need it to work in every different scenario, then maybe they can get around that if they're saving money on fuel versus electricity and they can have one truck for this, one truck for that. But in my experience, as far as running business and stuff like that, you don't want to have another layer of friction for your guys to be working. And I think that's going to be a hump. The trucks need to do truck things all the time.
So I would agree with you on a number of those points, and having, like, I managed a service business for a while. And so like a lot of those points resonate with me. But then on the flip side, I think there are a lot of the use case of what you're thinking of as the single contractor that doesn't have to do all that makes up a lot larger portion of the business, you know, the commercial use case than you would realize. I don't think it's 80% of commercial trucks that need to be able to do truck things that include towing heavy loads, long distances all the time. I think that there's lots of businesses where you'll start seeing these transition over to electric vehicles quicker. And then, you know, some of the other ones, they'll definitely lag further behind.
So I would disagree with you on that, because every time I've hired a contractor, there's been one head contractor, and then he's had about 8 to 10 guys. So there's 8 to 10 workers, or whatever you want to call them, to the ratio of that one contractor who is pricing jobs, who is managing. And so I think it is actually flipped the way that I was talking about.
This is a great discussion. I think the only way we'll see this play out is if Tesla can solve for those variables. Just make it just low cost per mile, make charging not an issue, or make it so that the range isn't an issue, and have it do truck stuff. And if it can prove that out over time, I think the development of their 4680 battery, some of the breakthroughs they've had this year, which is going in the new Cybertrucks that will be built later this year, will be interesting to track. You know, if they can get to a 400-mile Cybertruck at $65,000, I think that opens a gigantic market for them, like a ginormous market.
And don't get me wrong, I think it's coming. I think this is what our future reality looks like. I just think it's going to take a lot longer than what you or Farzad think is going to happen. I have one question. So I looked at a lot of these Model S's before I actually bought one, and I think there were 5 that I had the guy that we know through Tesla actually check, and there was either 3 or 4 of them out of the 5 that had their batteries replaced. That's a high number. for check. Maybe I just hit a bad string of cars. The Model S I'm in now, it had his battery replaced just a month ago. Farzad, you used to work for Tesla. Is this a common thing to have batteries replaced all the time? And how much do they cost to replace them?
The cost to replace, depending on the model, ranges anywhere between 10 to 15. From what I remember, a huge number of them are covered under warranty. Huge number of them. I didn't see batteries go out of the facilities often at all. We maybe shipped one high voltage battery out of our location, maybe two every couple weeks, once, one every week, something like that. No, that was one out of one location. I don't have any like statistics in front of me, but it's for the Model S and the Model X's is probably low single digit percentage of the batteries that got replaced over time. And I also think that cars that get added to the used car market, those are the ones that are most likely to have had an issue. And that's why people are offloading them. I think a vast majority of those cars are still in the original owner's hands and they haven't had an issue. They were very rare from what I saw. But the older the model, the more issues they had, but they were still rare.
So here's the problem with that. So the Tesla battery warranties, I think 8 years. So when you get these cars that are coming into the used space, which is what even potential new Tesla buyers are going to see, they're going to start hearing that this battery costs $15,000 to replace. The car's not worth $15,000 at that point. So you basically just throw away the car. That's going to be a big headwind because this is going to become a bigger story as we get out of warranty with a lot of these 2016, 17, 18 models. When these people are going to have to replace the battery, they're going to go to Tesla, say, okay, I need a new battery in this thing. Tesla's going to say it's $15,000. And I say, okay, well, the car is worth $16,000. So I'm just going to throw it away. Where would you like me to park it?
Yeah, I think that is a great call out. I think a percentage of those cars will definitely have that issue. I still think that it's going to be a very small minority. It's probably going to be very similar to with the older models to how often somebody buys a used gas car and then they have to have an engine rebuild or a transmission swap or something like that.
No, it's not the same because you can get an engine, like a used engine with a warranty put in a lot of these used cars for $2,000, $2,500. It's not $15,000.
With a warranty though.
No. With a warranty on top of it, that $2,500 total. So you get the motor put in and then you get a warranty with that. It's not.
Oh, I see. I'm sorry. Yeah. So the warranty cost is in $2,500. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's going to be something to track for sure. I think the net number of them, the percentage of it is going to be small. I don't think it's going to be an issue long term, but some people will face that. I mean, it's impossible to not have a situation where there's going to be some people that are going to have a battery swap or they're going to have to pay out of pocket. But I don't foresee that being an issue. I think these batteries, a vast number of them are extremely reliable. But we did ship HV batteries, you know, every couple of weeks we shipped one or two. But, you know, the company was also selling thousands of cars per quarter. So from a percentage perspective.
So here's your problem. Doesn't matter how big the percentage of how many times it actually happens. It's the perception. So the perception is when your battery goes out, throw away the car. If that's the perception, you lose sales because of that. It doesn't matter in reality. This is what we're facing right now with the actual charging. We just talked about it earlier. We know charging is not an issue. You just plug it up at home, right? That's not the perception. And the perception of people having to throw away their car because their battery goes out, That's gonna stop them from buying the car.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair call out. It's gonna be interesting to see how Tesla will navigate that. You know, how they'll try to fight that sort of perception over time. I mean, what I think of is like, okay, so how many cars catch fire in the United States, and how many of them do we hear about? Right. I think that's where the gas car industry has had they're fortunate not to have to fight with that because they've been around for so damn long. I think that's where Tesla has to cross that chasm where they have to be around long enough where people just understand that there is a very small chance a battery clunks out past warranty and a very small percentage will have to swap it. And that's just what you accept. Just like when you drive a gas car, there is a chance it will catch fire, but it's very few of them.
So I can give you an example of where this is happening on the ICE side of things. Nissan makes a CVT transmission. and you don't just go in and rebuild a CVT transmission, and they're very, very expensive. So guess what? People do not buy like 2007 and up Nissan Altimas on the used market anymore at all. And now they stay away from Nissans that have these CVT transmissions. And that cost is not even half of what this battery is going to cost from Tesla. So there's just an example of on the ICE side of that cost being known to a consumer, and that consumer saying, I don't want to have to deal with that.
I think that's a great call out. What's going to be interesting, like as I'm thinking through it, is with the improvements in battery costs and Tesla's autonomy sort of solution, like in a world where they solve for autonomy, let's say they figure out the autonomous piece of it, that car that has a broken battery that could be making $50,000 a year driving around, Tesla has an incentive to just give you the fucking battery, because they know over 10 years that car is going to gross $500,000. And at that point, it becomes economically feasible for them to just put unlimited year, unlimited warranty on the battery. I just want this thing on the road 24/7. That's where Tesla is fortunate. If they solve for self-driving, that's one way of solving it. Just warranty every battery. Just warranty every battery, right? That's one lever they could pull, but we'll see. We'll see if that's 1,000% dependent on autonomy being solved and making sure batteries don't cost $1 trillion, but they're already well on the
right. Way to and as that. The as the technology gets better, like battery costs should come down.
Yeah, they already have quite a bit, especially in the last 12 months, ever since we exited the COVID supply chain shock. The cost of a battery has never been, I think it's $70 per kilowatt hour at the cell level, which I think is probably at least half the cost of what it was in your Model S versus now. So the cost of that battery today is already half, probably more. So yeah, there's a trajectory to solve for this. So
I just want to shout out real quick. I know that, you know, Brandon runs a used car dealership, and he said, you know, don't ever buy from used car dealers because they suck. And that has, you know, traditionally been my experience as well. But Auto Hub, just north of Fort Worth, they were great to work with on the purchase of my Model 3. It's a couple of younger guys who are starting up their own little dealership. It's a real, you know, small time boutique operation. They're not moving that much metal yet. And they were awesome to work with, super transparent, very knowledgeable on the purchasing of an EV to get started. They buy it, they're kind of like honing in on, you know, trying to pick up trade-in Teslas that are being sold to the Rivian dealership, and then Rivian is kind of dumping them, and so then they're turning around and reselling those. And so they're carving out a nice little niche for themselves in more of like a premium used car segment. And like I said, like my entire experience with them was phenomenal compared to what I expected. They were reasonable on price, really bent over backwards to help me through all the issues that came up, and, you know, showed me any and every little problem or potential problem with the car beforehand. So I wanted to point that out, because it was not the experience that I was expecting, you know, having to work with a third party used car dealer. And so when you find someone who is, you know, pretty honest and straightforward and good to work with, it's nice to point that out.
So you just didn't realize you got ripped off. That's the thing.
Oh man. Shout out Brandon. EVs on Ice. Make sure you go check him out. Brand new channel, the greatest used car dealer you'll ever meet in your life, on top of the ones that Hans just mentioned. He also has Car Questions Answered, fantastic channel tracking the used car market. Brandon, thank you so much, brother. Really appreciate you. Come back anytime. This is a long story we're going to be talking about. I love how these like two worlds have collided. This is honestly one of my favorite like conversations I have with you. And I consider you a friend, because this is something that we're just shooting the shit about this stuff. And it's super fun. I think this is just getting started. This is just the beginning of these types of conversations. And there's nothing better to heal America than two different sides coming together and chatting about stuff, right? So thank you so much. Really appreciate you, brother. Thank you for coming on.
Absolutely. And I bought two Teslas, so now you can go buy their stock. There you go.
Okay, there you go. Bye, everybody. All right. And recording.